evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, November 28, 2019. The debt toll mounts in Boma State after heavy floods.
Some people drowned during their day with floods, and some people also died because of diseases that caused by floods.
And Sudanese women demand the transitional government change laws that they say oppress women.
We need to abolish this in the criminal law, Article 152, which means that indecent wear.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Boma State say 70 people have died following heavy floods that have hit the state this year. Boma Deputy Governor John Joseph Abula says several children and elderly people drowned in floodwaters. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Deputy Governor Abula, who is also chairman of the Disaster Management Committee, says most of the flood victims were caught in a heavy downpour, which lasted for hours, trapping them in their houses.
Some people drowned during their day with floods, and some people also died because of diseases that caused by floods. Because the teeming hospital that was run by MSF in Bibor also got destroyed, and everything that was totally submerged by floods.
Abula says Likwangle, Gumruk, and Pachala have the highest death tolls. He says the state secretariat was also destroyed. The state's headquarters have been moved to higher grounds. Last month, President Salva Kiir declared states of emergency in 17 states after heavy rains and flooding submerged dozens of villages in South Sudan. United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, says more than 900,000 people have been affected. Abula says aid agencies in the state are responding to the needs of thousands of families affected by the floods.
They are making intervention in the area. The Judge Rachel, the national government, international NGOs, and national NGOs, they intervene, and now they are providing shelters, and food items, and drugs.
UN OCHA recently says humanitarian agencies are encountering challenges in delivering assistance in the flood-affected areas due to poor roads and flooded airstrips. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
Hundreds of refugee families in Maban County, a former Upper Nile state, are struggling to put their homes and lives back together after floods swept through the area last month. The refugees, many of whom sought refuge in schools and health centers, are slowly returning to their villages. UNHCR says so far, at least six people have died in the flooding, including four children. Dimo Silva Aurelio visited Maban earlier this week and has this report from Juba.
Walking through the second largest refugee camp of Yusuf Batil in Maban, so much homes and shelters are visible as far as the eye can see. Flood waters have washed away nearly all of the refugees' belongings. Maban hosts 150,000 Sudanese refugees in four camps in Doro, Yusuf Batil, Kaya, and Genderesa. Some 57,000 citizens of Maban were also affected by the heavy floods. 52-year-old refugee Dumak Mufeti, a father of five, took shelter with his family in Batil Central Clinic and has just returned home. He has just built a temporary shelter for his family amid several collapsed schools. Speaking in Arabic, Mufeti says if the flood waters came at night, many people would have been killed.
The good thing is that it came in the early morning hours. Once the water enters, it does not take long before the house collapses. It has destroyed a lot of our belongings. This water has stayed with us here for more than 20 days.
The UNHCR run Batil camp hosts more than 47,000 Sudanese refugees, mostly from Sudan's Blue Nile region. The flooding destroyed latrines and contaminated water wells, boreholes, and safe drinking water systems, making it tougher for aid workers to fight the spread of waterborne related diseases. Though roads which remained cut off by the flood waters, schools and health centers have resumed normal operations, high water still occupies most of the surrounding camps of UC Batil. Women who normally fetch firewood or look for vegetables in nearby bushes had a difficult time venturing out. Speaking in Arabic, 25-year-old Mukbula Saleh says it is still not safe for her to go to the bush to collect firewood since there is still water all over.
We are now using these cries to light fire since there is no dry ground for us to go to collect firewood.
Speaking in Arabic, Maban Paramount Chief John Guy says locals have never seen such a devastating flood before.
Since our ancestral time, no water has ever come to this place like this. And that is why everybody is wondering how this came about. Could it be from God?
Guy says farm animals owned by both residents and refugees are suffering.
When the water came to this area, our cows could not go out of this small area for grazing because the water has covered all the area. Not until the water subsided, some of them have died, including most of our piglets.
Four children and two adults were killed since the flooding started in mid-October, displacing hundreds, according to United Nations Refugee Agency. Jacqueline Alex William is a UNHCR Protection Associate in Maban Refugee Camp.
For those children, they got drawn because these are children who wanted to cross either to the other side to see their family or children who are going to get some fish from nearby stagnant water. They got drawn and that is how they lost their life. And for the women and the men that was recorded, they were trying to cross to go to the nearby facility to access services.
Alex says stagnant water still engulfs most of the villages in Maban, and humanitarian workers warn that waterborne diseases are a very real threat, especially for children.
In some locations, the water has gone down, but as you can see in this area, we still have water, and children are playing around inside the water. Families are trying to find way to cross to the other villages through this stagnant water, which is also very risky to the population. You never know what is inside the water. There are a lot of snakes around and some sharp objects that are also risky.
This year's flood have affected nearly 1 million people in South Sudan, and some 600,000 are in need of immediate assistance. 42 nutrition centers across the country have had their operations interrupted, and an estimated 73 metric tons of cereals have been lost in this part of the country, according to the latest UN humanitarian report. Humanitarian agencies are appealing for $61 million to respond to the flood emergency. The government declared a state of emergency in several parts of the country last month. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The UN says up to 250,000 people have been affected by heavy rains in Djibouti, with the average amount for 2 years falling in 1 day. The situation is similar elsewhere in East Africa, where Kenya has reported 120 dead and 18,000 displaced by flooding and landslides, and parts of Somalia have been overwhelmed. South Sudan has reported 70 dead and says flooding has hit refugee camps. Doctors are worried that diseases, especially waterborne ones, might be spread. A group of Sudanese women activists are demanding that the transitional government in Sudan abolish certain articles in Sudan's criminal code, which they say oppress women. They also demanded that public order police units be suspended and enforce the general Sudanese police to implement all laws. Michael Atit has more on the story from Khartoum.
Some Sudanese women say abolishing Public Order Act does not solve the problem facing women in Sudan. Ehsan Fagiri, the head of the local NGO called Not Women Oppression, says Sudanese women have been suffering in silence for decades.
We need to abolish this in the criminal law, Article 152, which means that indecent wear, and 153 for when a woman and a man is staying in the same place, it means that they can practice sex. Look at the mentality of those people who are putting the laws.
She says choosing a partner in life is a personal choice and is a fundamental right. Article 154 and 155 bans prostitution in Sudan. The punishment for prostitution could be sentenced up to 5 years in prison. Women's activist Mahasin Abdullah says her office has registered nearly 50,000 cases of women tried at the public order courts for various controversial offenses, including indecent dressing. She also says she has documented cases of judges and police officers receiving bribes from the women they have arrested.
This amount of money is not written in the law. It depends upon the mood of the judge. And I believe it depends upon how much he doesn't have money. For example, they caught a girl who is smoking. They fine her 1,000. Why was that? What she did? Yes, smoking is bad, but she smoked for herself. She doesn't harm anybody.
Samia Argawi, a Sudanese lawyer who advocates for women's rights, says now that the Public Order Act is about to be abolished, the government should also abolish the Public Order Police Unit as well. She says Sudanese police officers have committed many atrocities against women.
We don't want to see this police unit to exist. There is no change if the government maintains them. The general police should take over and carry out their normal police procedure.
Argawi says activists are demanding that Sudan's constitutional document signed on August 17th should be unmistakably clear on the rights of women. Ibrahim Ahmed As-Sadiq, the Secretary General for the Sudanese Religious Philosophers, says Sharia law is very clear about how Muslims' nation should be ruled. Speaking in Arabic, As-Sadiq says the transitional government is moving too fast.
They should keep some amendment process till an elected government is formed. This is an emergency situation, and during this time, you cannot abolish or amend some controversial laws that might bring a lot of issues at the moment. They should prepare grounds and routes which could lead to change a lot of things in the country.
Sudan's Sovereign Council and the Cabinet have been meeting since morning, Thursday, to discuss three bills, including the country's controversial Public Order Act. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
More violence has hit the neighboring Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, hampering the fight against Ebola and raising concerns of a resurgence of the deadly disease, just as hopes were rising that it was being brought under control. The World Health Organization says five people were killed, including three Ebola workers, in an attack overnight in Baikato. One of the attackers was also among the dead, and two others were captured. A health official said warnings had been posted earlier, demanding that the health workers leave or face the worst. WHO already pulled out 49 Ebola workers, and UNICEF relocated 27 as the security situation in the volatile area has worsened over the past week. The most recent outbreak of Ebola has been plagued by problems from the start. It's in an ongoing conflict zone that also is an opposition stronghold, raising suspicion over any government intervention. Tracking people infected with the virus is critical, but many communities are no-go areas, and outbreaks of violence have forced health workers to stay indoors several times. There have been 3,303 cases of Ebola, including almost 2,200 deaths since August 2018. The WHO declared the second largest outbreak an international emergency in July 2019. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The African Union says governments can help their people experiencing disasters if they join a certain program. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much influence do your parents have on your decisions?
My parents had an influence on me before they passed away, especially my late dad. He inspired me to be the first in everything. At that time, I was in primary school.
In a case when I need to take any decision, I first consult my parent in order to give me a way out on how I should make a good decision. So they always contribute a lot in everything that I'm doing in my life.
I think they have a large influence on the decisions that I make. Because, well, I have to ask for permission for stuff to do, like if I want to go out, you know, stuff like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The African Union is urging African countries to join its insurance company so they can help support people who lose their properties in disasters. So far, the AU's African Risk Capacity has 30 member countries, but only 9 have joined and agreed to contribute to the insurance company. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali, Rwanda.
For the African Union, the spirit of self-reliance includes assisting thousands of Africans whose belongings disappear in disasters. Compaoré Antoine is from Burkina Faso. He says when things go terribly wrong, long waits are the rule for desperately needed external aid. He says, before asking someone else to help resolve your problems, you have to develop internal solutions. Why don't we have an internal fund that can be fed by African countries to address the continent's emergencies instead of always looking outside? According to African leaders, the truth is that countries really need assistance and can't afford to cover all their losses linked to climate change. El-Elim Salim is Sudan's Minister of Finance.
According to our resources, it is we don't have so much resource to cover all this. But by joining the ARC, I think we could find more resource. The African Development Bank said that he can finance about 50% from this. And I think it is very good for us.
The ARC was established to tackle the impact of natural disasters. In 2013, its assurance company was established to provide coverage for climate change-related damage. But the problem is that only 9 African countries have subscribed to contribute. Dele Babande is the chairman of ARC Limited.
Because what we do so far is we sit and then we ask somebody to come and help us. And that somebody comes 6 months, 9 months later.
Yes.
But that time, every livelihood is depleted.
Uh-huh.
Gambia, Senegal, Mali, Rwanda, etc. We put our forces together. Because if we are many, it's exactly like a tontin.
Uh-huh.
Everybody put a little bit in the common box. If something happened to one or two, you have enough to give to that person. Because not everybody has the problem at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So this insurance is a mutualistic type, is solidarity based with the Pan-Africanism spirit.
Since 2014, ARC Limited had disbursed $36.8 million to support more than 2.1 million people whose livelihoods rely on agriculture. For instance, Senegal received $16.5 million for food distribution and subsidized sales of animal feed. Mauritania got $6.3 million for food distribution to families in food insecure areas where livelihoods were hit hard in 2015. There is no fixed amount of money a country has to contribute. It depends on how much the things it can't allocate from the national budget. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Nearly one-third of Uganda's new HIV infections are among are among 15 to 25-year-olds who say, despite progress, stigma is still a problem. To raise awareness ahead of World AIDS Day on December 1st, Uganda holds an annual fashion show and beauty pageant for young people infected with the virus that causes AIDS and calls them the Young Positives. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
The pomp, dance, and fashion were on display at Uganda's Young Positives pageant this month in Kampala. But the aim of this annual show is not just beauty and talent. It is to fight the stigma and discrimination against young people who are HIV positive. Nicholas Niwagaba is with the pageant organizer, the Uganda Network of Young People Living with HIV and AIDS.
You're HIV positive, you're a moving dead body, or you're promiscuous. So we're trying to change that narrative to say that young people living with HIV or people living with HIV are human beings. We want the community to accept them.
Education on HIV prevention is also a key part of the Young Positives pageant, which displays condoms and promotes safe sex. UNAIDS says about 6% of Ugandans are HIV positive, one of the highest rates in East Africa. But there is progress in Uganda's fight against HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. AIDS-related deaths dropped by nearly 60% in 2018, says UNAIDS. But nearly one-third of the 53,000 new infections was young people between the ages of 15 and 25. Reaching this age group is key to halt the spread of HIV, says the Uganda AIDS Commission's Nelson Musova.
It matters how the message is packaged and who carries this message. And in the current generation, fashion, music, working with celebrities is one way to transmit the message to the young people, and we find this a very attractive. You can see the attention it's generating, you can see the participation.
19-year-old Taylor Timothy Kabogoza and one of his other five siblings were born HIV positive. Kabogoza says he tried to keep his status a secret, but his friends found out and started pointing fingers.
And for real, I tried to cover up that thing, but when I come back in my room, I'll be like, oh my God, this guy said something, oh my God.
Kabogoza acknowledged he has not always been consistent in taking his antiretroviral medication, but participation in the Young Positives beauty pageant boosted Kabogoza's confidence, and at this year's contest, he took second place. Kabogoza says he wants to pass on an upbeat message to other HIV-positive youth. Take your medication, he sings, and stop the self-shaming. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Africa's major economies, among them South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria, have in the last decade enthusiastically adopted the most American of holidays, the Shop Till You Drop extravaganza that is Black Friday. The event, which originated in the U.S. in the 1950s on the day after the Thanksgiving holiday, heralds the start of the holiday shopping period and promises steep retail discounts. But in Africa, where Thanksgiving is not celebrated, Black Friday has taken on a life of its own. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Forget Thanksgiving. In Africa, consumers are foregoing the turkey dinner and family drama. Instead, they are, in huge numbers, celebrating the bonanza that comes the day after.
The low price event of the year is finally here. Black Friday.
Today only. With up to 50% off. The world's biggest savings promotion is coming to shop.
Marketing website Black Friday Global estimates that Black Friday sales are 1,331% higher than average day sales in Nigeria and 1,952% higher in South Africa, the continent's two largest economies. In Nigeria, the average Black Friday shopper spends about $60. In South Africa, it's just over twice that amount per shopper. South African economist Mike Schussler explains the logic behind this adopted holiday, which he estimates has been observed in South Africa for about a decade.
There's a simple reason for that is I think Black Friday has become a little bit of a worldwide phenomenon, particularly I think in countries where consumers are very much needed by the retailers. Retailers have had to entice consumers from their tight spending into the shops. And in South Africa and a few other places, the end of November is normally the time period when people get what we call their Christmas bonus or their annual bonus.
And the phenomenon is growing. First National Bank, one of South Africa's largest financial institutions, reported this week that its cardholders made more than 2.5 billion rand. That's a cool 169 million US dollars worth of purchases last Black Friday. And they expect to see a 16% increase this year. In the world of electronic commerce, Black Friday has been a game changer, says Abdusalam Bensituni, a spokesperson for Jumia, a Nigeria-based e-commerce site that operates in more than 10 African countries. Black Friday, which Jumia started promoting in 2014, is now so big that it has eclipsed a single day, he says. He declined to give sales figures. He spoke to VOA from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
Just last year, we had more than 120 million visits in our website. And this year, we're expecting to have more than 150 million visits in our website. It was one day, Black Friday, it was on Friday. Then we moved to 1 week, and now it's 1 month for us.
So what are African consumers buying? More or less the same stuff they are everywhere else, he says. Electronics, phones, televisions, clothes. But although many of those items are not made in Africa, this consumption binge, he argues, is a good thing for the continent. Many of Jumia's vendors, he says, are small, local African enterprises.
Imagine tomorrow if we have this African free trade market between the African countries. We can have like a seller from Nairobi. He can sell directly to Nigeria or Ghana. Black Friday is just an opportunity to promote this e-commerce. So we are creating just like an infrastructure and visibility for a new digital economy.
Or maybe it's just a good day to get a sweet deal. Whatever the reason, in Africa, it's open season for Black Friday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Jammin' by Bob Marley.
We're jamming, jamming, and I hope you like jamming too. And the rules ain't no vow, we can do it anyhow. I and I will see you through. 'Cause every day we pay the price, we're the living sacrifice. We're jamming till the jam is through. We're jamming. To think the jamming was the thing of the past.
Listening to Bob Marley with the song Jammin'. I'm Yen Deng Bior in Washington. We appreciate you making us part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
We're jammin'.